Today's episode of Tech Talks on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network is brought to you by Tech Impact, focused on unlocking prosperity by embracing technology. For more, head to techimpact.it.
Episode 14. These guests were so great. I can't wait for you to dive into this episode, the second in our three-part cybersecurity mini-series. Welcome to Tech Talks with Kathy Simpson, everyone, and I'm your host, Kathy Simpson. You know, there are good days in the office, and then there are great days in the office. And by in the office, I mean crossing through the kitchen and then walking up the stairs to my home office over my garage. And on this great day in the office, I got to spend time talking with two fabulous leaders in their field focused on growing our technology sector. And it was brilliant. I love great days at the office. So everyone, you're about to meet David Shipley, the CEO of Boceron Security, and James Stewart, the founder of Troj AI. I don't want to give away all the details, but these guys love investigation, pinpointing problems, solving crime, safety, teaching, coaching, and building. The intent of the Tech Talks podcast is to learn from each other. And as we all know, that's not just about learning technology. Far from it. Our guests tell us stories about why their work is so important to them, what inspired them into this field, and how they see themselves and their teams shaping the future. So sit back and relax, or grab your hat and mitts so you don't get cold while you're out on your walk, and enjoy the episode. Okay, everybody, welcome to Tech Talks. I've got two great guests today, and we're going to dive right in. So welcome, David, and welcome, James. David, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you studied, and why are we talking today again about cybersecurity?
Sure. So I'm an accidental cybersecurity professional. I never envisioned that this was the career I was going to end up. In fact, when I was a kid growing up, this career didn't even exist except in science fiction. I've been a Canadian Forces soldier, a newspaper reporter, a marketer, and on Mother's Day 2012, a hacktivist group, so a group of political activists, went on a hacking spree across North America and knocked on UNB's digital door to cause some chaos. And I got involved with security then by raising the alarm to the IT team and helping them respond to the incident. And I started to go down the Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole of cyber on that day. A fun fact about my sort of initiation into the industry, you know, you often hear Russia, North Korea, China, the axis of hacking evil, as it were. And this attack was actually a U.S. Navy sailor hacking the university from a U.S. Navy nuclear aircraft carrier. And it's the only time in my career I've seen NCIS outside of the TV show. So it's always interesting where cyber is going to take you. And, you know, from my background, I'm not a programmer. I don't have a degree in computer science. I mean, everybody who knows me knows I am probably New Brunswick's second biggest nerd. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's more of a nerd than I am. But I'm a business guy. I'm an arts, liberal arts graduate. And, you know, business school is still liberal arts. Don't tell the faculties of business, but it still is. And there's a place for me in a career in cyber. And thanks to the opportunities here in New Brunswick, we've created a 27-person company that serves household national brands and names in telecommunications, banking, government, and more. And we focus on the human side of cyber. And how do we get people, process, and culture and change the security culture in an organization, not just add new security tools to the mix? And that's the business I'm in, and I love it every day, although I'm noticing as I try and grow a bit of a beard and a goatee this year, that I've got more and more white hairs, I suspect is caused every time I hear of the latest cybersecurity incident or story. Those just keep propping up.
I'm sure it doesn't feel like it for you, David, but it feels like it for me. Yesterday, there was five of you at Boceron Security. It's just been a massive amount of growth over the past couple of years in particular.
Absolutely. I think, you know, in 2017, we were We got our first funding from MBIF for $500,000, and we did $100,000 in sales. We ended this year just over $2 million in sales. More than 475,000 people have access to our technology across almost 300 customers. And we just keep growing. But it is such a New Brunswick story out of UNB, just like QRadar, backed by our early stage innovation ecosystem, Mariner Partners, NBIF, backed by established companies like Bulletproof and Mariner for our earliest customers, and then able to grow on our own with a significant dash of luck. Because, you know, it was one meeting in 2017 that introduced us to a global bank that changed our entire trajectory.
The thing is, you make it sound easy, and we all know there's nothing easy about it. It's like the perfect story out of UMB. Something happened to have that happen. You know, the ecosystem came all around you to support everything that you were doing. David, I know it's not that easy. It takes a lot of work from leadership and your team. Tell us how you get through some of that time and the grit that's required to get you through.
You know, it's a really interesting point. We're here today because of the choices I made to surround myself with people who are smarter than I am. We all share the same passion for the mission of what we try and do. But every time we look at bringing a team member, I look for someone that has skills and ideas and perspectives that are different or better than mine. And my job is to get out of their way. And when you've got a team like that, the rest of the challenge is so much easier. I mean, no one climbs Mount Everest alone. And startups, as James knows, it is a Mount Everest. And I don't think anyone who's probably climbed one of those mountains, I haven't climbed a mountain myself, but I've started thinking a lot about that challenge. I wonder when you get to the peak of it, you look back and go, God, if I had only known what I was truly getting myself into, would I have climbed this mountain? I think many of them go on to do it multiple times, but I wonder how many do it just once. And so for me, you know, getting through those hard times, and you are absolutely right, there are so many failures that I have had in Beauceron over the last 5 years. I could write numerous books about all the mistakes and decisions I made. The only saving grace is that we didn't have any critical failures. We learned quickly. We adapted quickly. The initial financial model I built for Beauceron, what's hilarious is we almost got precisely 99% accuracy on the number of customers we had, the rough number of seats, and a little bit on the employee count, actually. The forecasting was spot on. We were completely out to lunch on how much we thought people were going to pay for our product. Absolutely. And the saving grace for us is we were equally out to lunch on what we thought it would cost us to provide this service in the cloud and build it. But we turned out to be, you know, pennies on the dollar for cloud infrastructure costs, which changed the entire ballgame for the costing and price structure. So it's really interesting.
So I want to come back, and we're going to spend some time talking about culture. But James, you have a much different background. I'm looking at your profile. Should we be calling you Dr. James here? I mean, you've got a PhD in computer science. You have a master's in computer science. Your undergrad was in a Bachelor of Science in Data Analysis. You've been geeking out for a very long time, and I hate those stereotypes, but you have been to school for a long time learning. Tell us about that.
I'm not sure what I am. I've always just sort of gone towards things that interested me. And for quite a period of time, I really didn't fit in any one camp because I wasn't, you know, 100% academic. I did my PhD while I was in industry, so I didn't really fit that world. And because I had a foot in the academic side, I probably didn't focus on some of the traditional career paths on the software engineering side. So I really didn't fit in that either. I think I found my passion when I joined the police force here in St. John as a crime analyst. And honestly, in a different life, I would be an officer on the street. It's in my DNA. I'm fortunate that I'm still an auxiliary officer with the St. John Police Force. I've been one for 16 years, and I love crime. I love the sinister world, and so that's where things started to come together for me, because with the technical background and the sort of the exposure to the malicious side of the world, I'd like to think I bring sort of a perspective to cybersecurity that is helpful. And then that sort of led into, back in 2016, we started our first company. It was called AI, with Canadian bent, EHEYE. And again, it was public safety. We used artificial intelligence and computer vision to automate video surveillance monitoring for the early detection of weapons and disturbances. And as most cyber folks will tell you, that the lines between cyber and physical are blurred now. I mean, if you can't break into a network through cyber, you're going to physically penetrate it. So that company, that use case was inspired by the Parliament attack in 2014, where we lost one of our Canadian soldiers. And again, that was all kind of fueled from that public safety bent. And so then that company was sold to a Toronto-based defense company called Patriot One. I was lucky enough to be installed as their SVP overseeing video analytics. And during that time, sort of became aware, as much as the academic world has become aware, that AI is actually hackable. And so I left that position to start Troge AI because, again, I saw sort of a liability, an attack surface that I felt was going to, you know, affect people. So, yeah, I guess that whole public safety service piece is in our DNA, and even at a company level, which makes it sort of easier to come to work and climb those mountains, as David said. And it's funny because I actually messaged David, last week, when you announced your revenue for the past year, you had achieved a peak, right? And suggested you take a couple of minutes to enjoy that, because once you get to a peak, it's like, you don't even get to enjoy it. It's like, okay, there's another issue to get to. So yeah, that's, I think I know who I am now.
Sounds pretty clear to me. You know, what would be helpful is for our listeners, maybe just talk a little bit about what is AI and how, you know, you talked about it's hackable. Can you just talk about that a little bit so our listeners can understand it more fully?
Well, AI in general is when you build models so that the computer can learn by itself to make decisions. And the issue is when those decisions, you know, affect real people, there's a whole slew of sort of pitfalls that the industry is well aware of now around, you know, explainability, biases, you know, racial biases, privacy issues. The hackability sort of goes a step further. It's not as top of mind right now. And we sort of compare it to the inflection point of when, you know, the World Wide Web in the early 90s, all those innovations were coming out and changing the world daily. It was built on infrastructure that was never created with security in mind. That's exactly where we are with AI.
8 or 9 years ago, we weren't talking about cybersecurity in the mainstream.
Yes.
Your brains were there, and, you know, folks at the university were doing things, and there were leading companies, of course. But now cybersecurity is something that kids in school talk about, they learn about. So, I mean, the world has changed a lot in a short period of time.
Well, the automobile industry actually has a trajectory that we've been following. So we build cars without seatbelts, airbags, without really understanding rules of the road. And in the first 50 years of cars, you know, the modern era of cars was absolute carnage. And eventually our tolerance for the mayhem and the harm caused to humans got to the point where we fought for seatbelt laws. I mean, it's probably something we take for granted today, but it took lobbying in the US Congress, in Canadian Parliament, at provincial and state legislatures for seatbelt laws. I mean, we all think that that's fairly obvious nowadays, and cyber has been on that same trajectory. James and I, you know, it's interesting, James, you're always a sheepdog. You know, there's always that characterization. There's sort of a way of looking at the wolves, like sheepdogs, sheep, and wolves. There are always people that want to victimize others, the wolves. And there are always other people that want to ring around the flock and protect them. And that driving force is what guides us, and the tech follows. But that passion to protect people, that's what gets us up every day. And cyber, you have to understand, like, where this all got started was organized crime and making money. And we all got to laugh or not, you know, back in the days of spam. But spam made millions of dollars for Russian organized crime. And then when spam was no longer a profitable business model with fake pharmaceuticals, when the credit card companies started cracking down, crime evolved. And it went from an annoyance now to a significant revenue stream causing real physical harm to humans. You know, there was an attack on the University of Vermont hospitals in the fall. And it was a ransomware attack with email-based ransomware. And it crippled their IT systems and delayed chemotherapy treatments to hundreds of people. They normally were able to process 65 chemo patients per day. They were down to 15. Because of the impact on their efficiencies, the things that tech enables healthcare to do today were no longer there. So it's not just about money. We're talking about life and death.
It's such a great example. And the more examples that you use like that helps people understand why we have to have this proactive risk mindset and thinking about it. So David, tell us about your software. What does it do? All of a sudden, you've got it in the hands of hundreds of thousands of users. How did that happen?
So the biggest thing that we introduced was, you know, the concept of teaching people about cyber has been around for the better part of a decade. The concept of doing simulated email attacks the same way that criminals do, so-called phishing, has been around for a while. Combining them wasn't necessarily the innovative part. The secret sauce to what we did was we developed a personal risk score. And the risk score works like the Apple Watch or the Fitbit. It's a score that you can see and you can influence. And when you do good things, you get a better score. And that taps into the innate human love of gamification. You know, when we talk about gamification, it's not literally playing video games to learn something. It's sometimes just the process of making something fun or encouraging, or that neuroscience behind dopamine and nudge theory and behavioral science. Those are the things that we brought into play. And, you know, frankly, the tech is, it's a web-based software as a service. It is in of itself not like completely revolutionary. But in the same way that Apple, and I'm a huge Apple fan, they never really invented anything new. They take ideas that existed, they polish them completely and bring them to market to create a whole new perception of the value that they can create. And that's what we've done with Boceron. And, you know, we look at the global cybersecurity spend, 99% of it has been on the technology side. 1% has been, hey, maybe we should look at the human aspects of this. And yet every single incident and breach, every single one of them can be traced back to people, process, and culture. You know, people may be familiar with the giant SolarWinds hack. And it's now such a big hack by the Russians that I'm not even sure just talking about it being just SolarWinds even makes sense anymore, James, because they literally hacked the planet for 9 months. They had everything and they had so much to do. They had a smorgasbord of victims that they literally had to prioritize where they were going. But when you look at SolarWinds and the root causes there of how this company that's used by 400 of the Fortune 500 got compromised, their CEO was a CFO who looked at every single expense they had and maximized shareholder value, often at the expense of security, with their security folks resigning. SolarWinds got hacked because of a cultural issue in that organization. There were all kinds of technological solutions that could have absolutely prevented the big Russian payday. This wasn't a tech problem. This was a business decision. Cyber is a business issue. And that's the thing. And there are so many different roles in this industry. People think you have to be wearing your hoodie in your basement, going through lines of code. We need people that can do risk analysis. We need people that can communicate and market and talk about security and build security cultures. We absolutely need nerds behind computer screens unpacking malware, doing forensics, which is, by the way, really cool. I mean, CSI Cyber probably didn't do it justice, but when you figure out how a piece of malware really works, it's a eureka moment. So there's just so many different things you can do in this field that require all kinds of different degrees that it's just a huge opportunity.
So David, I just want to talk culture for a moment, because we so often talk about it's a great technology solution. We have fantastic founders. We have fantastic software companies and solutions here in Atlantic Canada. There's no question about it. But we're also laggards across the country in the adoption of technology. We've got the data to show it and prove it. This year, we launched a new program called Digital Boost to try to do exactly that, get a focus in Atlantic Canada and in New Brunswick around technology adoption. And it comes down to culture and creating that culture where we understand that. How have your team been able to start working on that issue when you're out selling to clients?
Well, I think, first of all, when it comes to the culture in Atlantic Canada, we have a huge advantage. We want to trust and build relationships. We believe in community. We are talkers. Not everybody, but broadly speaking, we just like to gab. A central part of our culture is the kitchen party when we're allowed to have those again. When we bring people to Atlantic Canada for conferences, we always throw kitchen parties. So we want to build connections and relationships and value. And that's a huge asset to us. We have not been provided the examples of how technology can enable us to be who we are more, with more people, to have more connections, to take our natural strengths and amplify it. And so we need to talk about technology in that positive sense. But we weren't always laggards. You know, Frank McKenna led this province to put us on the map. We had the first fiber optic networks to the neighborhoods. This narrative that we've lagged in tech is only because we've allowed ourselves to lag in tech. We have invented world-leading technologies in Atlantic Canada, and we will continue to do so. But we have to keep telling those stories, and we need new stories. You know, I was so happy that Gordon Pitts did Unicorn in the Woods. Not because I was mentioned briefly in it. I mean, I've got a big ego, but that's not it. It was because it told a new story. It was the logical outcome of the McKenna NBTEL story, but it was a new chapter. And we can tell that story. Like, you know, James's company, building artificial intelligence to detect weapons to prevent school shootings, you know, he invented some really cool stuff in Atlantic Canada and exited his company to a larger one. And that technology will be put to use across the place. Now he's on to something next and creating a new chapter and a new narrative. I haven't exited yet, James. Unfortunately, I think I got another 5 to 10 year grind before I get this thing across the line. But that's a success story. And vehicles like what you're doing with this podcast, Kathy, is exactly how we change the culture.
So James, you were with a great company, had another idea. You knew what you were getting into when you started your new startup. You've got some gray hair to show for our listeners out there, just like the rest of us, James. Don't worry. We've got a little bit more hair than David's got. But tell us a little bit about what got you started with Troge AI. And look, you've just landed a $750,000 round of financing. So we want to talk about that too. So give us some more detail about your company.
Well, so So we just recently went through a Techstars program. We're extremely proud to have gone through that program. Part of that was really cool leadership training by this wonderful group. And they sort of had us focus on identifying what are our intentions. You know, when you get up in the morning, what is it you're trying to do? And turns out I've identified mine as creating jobs. And when you put all of the stresses under that light of creating jobs, it kind of makes the stress go away in many respects. Because how do you lose? How do you fail when you're creating jobs? And so that 750 that very fortunate to have unlocked, we've started a new team here. We're 8 people full time. We've got a calendar year to innovate and get our product to market and to the right market. So we've already succeeded as far as that goes. I take a lot of pride in the group that is still here in New Brunswick. When I left Patriot, we were about 28 people and hiring. And it sounds like they may be hiring again. So like that to me,
cause success.
Yeah. And I see David giving a thumbs up. Like every one of those people, they have families and mortgages and car payments and babies. That's what it's all about. And I have 3 young children of my own. I guess maybe they're not that young anymore, 14, 13, and 11. But I want them to have options, and I love where we work and play. So that's sort of my intentions.
So when I looked at your content, you know, you say we protect your AI from data poisoning and model evasion attacks. Tell us about that.
All right. So this is the cool stuff. So when you build computer vision models, you have to curate, you know, huge amounts of data. So, you know, let's say you wanted to do an automated target recognition system for the defense sector to identify tanks. So first thing you would do is go gather, you know, 10,000 images of tanks. That imagery can come from a whole different, you know, many different spots in the supply chain. And it's possible that a malicious actor who knows how to do deep learning, they can actually, and this is just one attack. I always find myself apologizing to investors that no, this is just one attack I'm giving you. They can actually embed an image within the image that's invisible until it goes into the AI backbone for training. So the images actually get resized down to a target dimension. And depending on the AI backbone, it expects a different target dimension. It might use different resizing algorithms to get there. And so we showed an example where we were able to flip a tank, completely flip the image to a school bus. Yeah, you can imagine you're now building your target recognition system to treat tanks and school buses as threats. So that example is you know, visceral. It's not meant to, you know, we're not trying to sell fear, but it's real. And the folks that are building these AI modules or taking them off the shelf, they need to know that these examples exist. So that's on the data poisoning side or Trojan attack. That's where we got our company name. On the model evasion side, that's where we protect the model at deployment time. So these models are deployed. Let's say you've got a medical device that scans and evaluates a skin lesion for cancer, not cancer. You can actually introduce just the right amount of noise into that image. It's imperceivable to us. And it would actually force the classification to go from benign to malignant. And, you know, again, going back to apologizing to investors, why would somebody do that? Well, it's all about money. Follow the money. If you had a doctor that wanted to do insurance fraud and order a battery of tests that are unnecessary, you know, it's, or you've got, somebody that just wants to mess with your system and go the other way to catastrophic consequences. And we're often positioned in a place where, well, are these attacks really happening? And we've stopped apologizing. And now we're just saying, yes, they're happening. They're happening at the state level. They're happening all over the, well, how do you know? Because I've spent 20 years in a malicious space. Mm-hmm. That's how I know. So yeah, those are the two examples of what we protect.
So Techstars is a big deal in the AI space, that program.
Which one?
The program you just went through in Montreal. It's a big deal.
Yes, it was a highlight of my entrepreneurial career. Yes, beyond the skill sets of their directors and associates and the vast network that they gave us, access to, just around, validating what we were doing, the access to capital. They have a culture, that particular startup accelerator, their culture right from the beginning is give first. If another, Techstars company reaches out for whatever reason, you stop what you're doing and you help first. And that again, it kind of resonates with our DNA here to help first. If there's a New Brunswick or an Atlantic Canadian company, stop what you're doing and help first.
I love it. And David, I know you've participated in some accelerator programs as well. And early on at the beginning of Beauceron.
Yeah, we it's funny. It's every year we keep getting involved with different programs. Like it was Energia at UNB that we first got it started, and ECOA's partnership with Energia gave us our first $15,000 before we closed our investment round, so I could get an office, get some insurance, and actually start the company up. So that was huge. We did Cyber London, which is Cylon, and that's where Catherine Cameron, our chief operating officer, led our presence. And the British helped us learn how to have good sales-oriented conversations, like to really discover through discussion how to create value. It was amazing. And then we just graduated from Canada's first national cybersecurity accelerator, the Rogers Cybersecure Catalyst in Toronto. So that was huge. And then this year, and I think this will be the last one for a while, we were accepted into the Independent Community Bankers Association, the ICBA in the US, which represents 4,700 banks, collectively 95% of bank branches in the United States are these small banks. And it's out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And I have to say, I'm learning a lot of commonalities between New Brunswick and Arkansas, and people and culture are common. You know, that down to earth nature, salt of the earth kind of folks that get to know you and want to help you. And, James' point about the Techstars program about helping first, that's so key. I wanted to build on something, James was talking about in terms of the evolution of cybercrime. In our industry, there's something called the CIA, which is not the Central Intelligence Agency. It's confidentiality, integrity, and availability of data. And we've seen a lot of emphasis around the confidentiality of data. So data breaches and all the impact that has. We've seen a lot of attacks around the availability of data. So that's ransomware, crippling hospitals. It's also denial of service attacks that bring down key parts of the web infrastructure, like the DIN attack a couple of years ago that brought down Netflix, Amazon, Visa, everybody. Integrity attacks have kind of been, the golden goose for cybercrime, particularly as businesses rely on data to make decisions. And so imagine you can poison a stock trading algorithm to benefit things. Imagine an algorithm for monitoring a modern energy production facility. These aren't science fiction anymore. They're increasingly used for this automated decision-making for safety. And we've literally seen attacks against computer-based systems for managing a factory in Germany, so it caused a boiler to explode. We saw geopolitical attacks from Iran against Saudi Arabia to destroy their infrastructure. We've seen attacks from Iran to Israel to attack their water treatment facilities to try and over-chlorinate, poison people's water. all kinds of chaos happening. And as AI becomes central to improving our effectiveness, like AI for the digital revolution of companies is the difference between the last 30 years of bringing computers into business has been a propeller plane. AI and computers are a Concorde jet. Mm-hmm. With all of the same benefits and risks. The Concorde was a beautiful, highly specialized aircraft, but it was real sensitive to tomfoolery. So, you know, that's the nature. And we always react to safety after we have a Titanic. You know, the thing about the Titanic thing in terms of my last analogy for cyber is they got overconfident about their tech. It's an unsinkable ship. They went in iceberg season when they knew it was risky and they didn't have enough lifeboats. And they said, it's all going to be fine. That is not a one-off in human history. And we keep doing that. Now, the scale and the consequences with cyber are huge. So, you know, I'm a huge fan, James, of the work you're doing. I think the consequences of what you're looking at now will really be seen fully, unfortunately, in the next 10 years. And we'll all have to live through it.
So, I mean, James, you've got a great base of funding now. You've got 8 people. I believe you said you're going to really start working hard on your product. David, you've just become a Microsoft partner.
Yes.
And so that's a different, you know, we're starting now to talk about business relationship partnerships. How do you, to help you scale and grow in it even more? Tell us what you're hoping is going to happen with that market, that partnership.
Well, we got educated about the benefits of becoming a Microsoft partner because Microsoft was one of the sponsors of the Rogers Cybersecure Catalyst. And so they brought in their go-to-market team, and we got a chance to meet Kevin McGee, who's the chief security officer for Microsoft, an absolutely phenomenal person. And he took that people first, like how to help approach, and really learned about what we're doing. And he's made available folks at Microsoft so we can learn about their technologies and how we could integrate our work, which is, you know, powered by Microsoft Azure in their data centers, already integrating with technologies like Exchange, Active Directory, and more, and how we could go even further. So we're actually going to be bringing to market technologies this year where we integrate with things like Microsoft Defender, their AV product, and bring that data into our system where we are getting more data and security signals from Microsoft products. And that's on the technology side. On the go-to-market side, on large enterprises, there's a whole new opportunity for us to work with large enterprises via Microsoft and making our products available in their digital store. I mean, they are for business what the Apple iTunes store is to consumers. And so how do we create a better channel and path to market? And you can work with these global companies. And here's the thing. They are eager for it. And, you know, when they explained how the program works, it wasn't that hard to apply and get into it and go through that process. Probably the most successful company in New Brunswick right now working with Microsoft that I know of, well, two, Bulletproof, which has done just a phenomenal job of building value with them, and Cognitive Spark. And Cognitive Spark is just killing it in terms of augmented reality and leveraging that relationship with Microsoft. So we had two really good examples of going, okay, like why are we not doing this? And I think we're kind of the odd kids out. We didn't just automatically jump in the Amazon Web Services pool. We went with Azure because they had a better program for startups. And so this just led to that opportunity.
A shout out to my old company, T4G, because they've won some national awards in the data analytics and data science space, now owned by MMP. But another great example of a New Brunswick company that are playing on the national scale because of the Microsoft partnership. A lot of people don't know about that. Bulletproof have been doing incredible work. They've got a roadshow coming up. And Cognitive, really glad you put the shout out for them because what they're doing in their virtual reality space is really interesting. And interesting that it's getting the attention of some of the areas around defense and Navy, and you guys got a lot of space and yet brain of yours in that space between the two of you, between your time in the service and your time in the police force. That's really interesting. So, look, I am mindful of our time. I want to talk about jobs. Beauceron, you are hiring a boatload of people right now. I can't get over it. It's fantastic. We know that this podcast, we're trying to make sure students and newcomers and people who are looking for work know what's going on in the market. So tell us a little bit about what you're hiring for right now, David. It's across the board.
Yeah, so it's, we're hiring on the development side. We're hiring entry-level and mid-level and senior sales positions to complement the growth that we're going to see, particularly, you know, helping us grow in the U.S. market through our partnerships there. And a few marketing roles as well on top of that. So I think all said and done, and this has been, James, like a big moment for me. It's like, whew, this is the single biggest cohort we've ever brought on in the company's history. I think the total headcount by the time we're done filling all roles will be something like 12 to 15 positions. And so, you know, that's a huge growth for us. And you know, the point that James made earlier about it can be terrifying to run one of these companies. Absolutely. And courage is not the absence of fear. This is a Franklin Roosevelt quote. It is the realization that there's something more important that gets you through it. And your point about creating these jobs and these opportunities, for me, Kathy, watching the growth of the next generation of potential entrepreneurs, trying to do in my own small way what NBTEL did for New Brunswick that led to things like iMagic, QRadar, Radian 6, et cetera, replicating that, even doing it as much as I can to see how Beauceron, big Beauceron gets, sure. But what's the next generation going to look like that have been given this phenomenal opportunity to gain the skills to work with global banks and go from there? So the jobs agenda has been huge. And what I'm really proud about is, you know, we don't talk about this enough with startups, but, you know, the money that has been invested in the public side in Beauceron, you know, we'll have paid that back already in payroll back to people working in jobs by the end of this year. And so we've already got a return on investment for the money that's there, plus the upside baked into if we have, you know, what I hope to have continued growth and that large exit. But we've created something that's just now starting to sprout. And I hope someday, James, to be able to wave the successful exit flag, whether I climb this mountain again, TBD.
So James, how are you approaching getting people interested in this space? How do you help sell the capability, the opportunity for growth here? Because, you know, it's we've got some work to do. We are lacking talent. We keep talking about the fact that we're lacking talent.
Yeah. Shout out to iMagic, by the way, that David, that was my very first job. And there's iMagic people everywhere. You know, as far as our hiring has gone, we've been very fortunate. We've, in the AI space, in the sort of deep learning computer vision space, though it's very difficult to find folks with experience in that. But as far as finding people with skills and the right attitude, we've been very fortunate. We hire, you know, folks straight out of UMB, MBCC. Our current go around, our first two employees were from MBCC, and they're, you know, our rocks that we're building the company around, came straight out of MBCC, took a chance on us, and we were able to sort of build around them. Yeah, so we're able to sort of selectively pull in a senior resource here and there to educate, maybe to bring those folks along. And as long as they have the skills and the attitude, and East Coast, you know, has a grit that, you know, in my experience, we just outperform. Like, we get stuff done. We have a culture of delivery. And, you know, I could you know, guess why that is. Maybe it's, you know, we're closer to the axe, or, you know, there are fewer jobs maybe. But the talent here is as good as anywhere.
I love that point, James, because, you know, it was so interesting to go to Silicon Valley for the first few times. And I don't know what I expected, Kathy, when I flew into Silicon Valley. I don't know if I had like this Futurama, sort of like it's going to be like 100 years ahead of us, et cetera. And, I landed in San Francisco and we drove out.
You were thinking George Jetson was going to be there.
I thought it was going to be that. And it was an office park. I mean, it could have been Milledgeville. It could have been Fredericton's Knowledge Park. It was nothing special about even the architecture was, I was expecting grandiose buildings, to which a good friend pointed out it's in the middle of a fault line. So they don't build tall buildings there for a reason. Interesting point. It's the people that made Silicon Valley special. It was the culture that was born from HP. And it's interesting, this pandemic, and we look at all the suffering we've had and all we've had to endure, but it has been the single greatest leveling field of access to talent we have probably ever experienced professionally in human history. And I love James's point. Like, our people are special. We do get it done. And I would love to see, more of that, like, culture of we get her done. That is who we are in Atlantic Canada. And that's why this is probably, Kathy, I was on the periphery of T4G and all these different stories that came before us. I'm thinking about Ian Kavanaugh's company, Amber, and all of these other firms, just really smart people that did really cool things for huge customers. 99% of New Brunswickers or Atlantic Canadians never knew about or heard about that we were doing these things. They get gobbled up by these big firms, your EYs, your Deloittes, your everybody else, MNPs. But they come for our people, and we have to celebrate that more.
So if you think about that importance, you guys have been talking about culture, giving first. I think it's a very consistent theme that came out in Gordon's book, Unicorn in the Woods. And James, you're working on a space that is specialized. There's not 20 mentors that you can call on here in Atlantic Canada in your space, but it's going to keep growing. Do you feel a responsibility to try and nurture that next generation of talent?
That's probably one of the most fun things we do. When we went through the first company, our folks knew how much money we had in the bank. And that was always driven by my own desire. When I was, at my first startups as an employee, I never had that visibility. And I wanted that. And you were always kind of relegated to, you go develop your software. Our attitude here is to educate our teams so they experience the startup journey as well, with the goal of actually, you guys go out and start a company and hire me. I would be the day that I actually take a job at a really cool startup where someone came through sort of, I'll call it our program, because it is. My co-founder and I sit in a room with, you know our space here, with like big kind of windows, brick through the brick wall. It's wide open into the other space. So the team hears, and we do that purposely. We don't kind of go hide in a meeting room. They hear the successes and they hear the challenges, and they're learning from our subset of missteps and how to raise money and how to position a product. So part of our building this company is also building, a next set of entrepreneurs for us.
Yeah, James, I love that you, we did the same thing. Like, we are fully transparent with our team of where we are financially. What's in the bank, what the runway looks like, what we need to hit for our goals. And part of that is I don't know if it's a Catholic sort of conscious guilt thing. It's like, okay, this is what we got. This is where we're at. This is everything you need to know. Like, it's an entrepreneur confession. I don't know. But it's great because people can actually see, and increasingly this younger, I'm Gen X, are about to say the younger generations. That's a weird moment for me. But the younger generations, they want to know more of the why.
Yes.
And why are you making that? It's not enough just know you made this decision. Well, here are the, some of the factors I was considering, like why, what was going on. And when you can do that, you can walk away knowing I put everything on the table. And it's like being a coach of a sports team, I think. I don't have a terrible amount of experience on this thing, but if you don't tell your players the whole thing that you're thinking, how do you possibly expect them to be able to execute to their full potential and know what the stakes are? It's like taking a hockey team to the Stanley Cup and not letting them know, hey, it's game seven. This is going to be the deciding game and we got to win this. You kind of got to give them the context so that they got the hustle, right? So that's been always my thought on it.
And they need the mental skills. So it's just not all those technical skills. It's the ability to be resilient and be full of grit and to imagine a better world. Well, look, I'm so pleased to have you today. I'm so excited for you and your new company. I know you've got a lot of work ahead and it's great for the entire province. And I know you're located in St. John, so it's great for the greater St. John region too. And thanks again.
Thank you. And thank you for all that you do.
Hey, just as I finish up here on this episode, I just wanted to reiterate how much I love discussions like this one, because our guests talk about so many things that's so helpful for all of us. Today, they talked about leadership, about how important culture was to making change happen in organizations. They talked about giving back and mentoring and why cyber has become such a personal passion. And it's infectious just listening to them both. You know, when James talked about the culture of Give First, which was a focus at Techstars, it really hit home to me that that mindset is here and it's so strong in our region and it's ingrained in so many of us. The community is tight and help is always a phone call away. And don't forget, David's team is hiring like crazy right now, so check them out. Keep an eye on these two companies. I'm excited to see the impact that they will be making and how they are building out the talent in our cybersecurity cluster. What a joy, a pure joyful day to have them on the show. When you have a look at the show notes, we'll have links to their companies, the accelerator programs that they participated in, and much more. Thanks again, everyone, for spending time with us, and talk soon.
Tech Talks is brought to you by Tech Impact. Learn more at techimpact.it. The podcast is hosted by Tech Impact CEO, Kathy Simpson. It's produced by me, Matt George. It's engineered by the great Zachary Peltier and is part of the Unsettled Media podcast network.